Hello, and welcome to the Chest Journal Podcast, where each month we host a discussion with the authors of important articles from the current issue of the journal, adding context and commentary to the challenges facing clinicians in the fields of pulmonary, critical care, and sleep medicine. To introduce today's topic, here's your host, Dr. Gretchen Winter.
On behalf of CHEST, I would like to welcome you to this CHEST Journal podcast. My name is Gretchen Winter, and I am your CHEST podcast moderator. Thank you all for joining us today for a discussion with both Drs. Meera John and Bishak Charu. Along with several colleagues, they wrote an article in the CHEST Journal titled Variable Practice, Variable Results, Impact of Post-Interview Communication Practices Among Critical Care Medicine and Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine Fellowship Applicants and Program Directors. Dr. John is a senior fellow in pulmonary and critical care medicine at the University of Washington. She is also a member of the Association of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine Program Directors Fellows Working Group. And her professional interests include survey design and implementation, curriculum design, and quality improvement. Dr. Charu is an associate professor of pulmonary, critical care, and sleep medicine, and the program director of the Pulmonary and Critical Care Fellowship Program at the University of Washington. She is involved in undergraduate, graduate, and continuing medical education, and she is an active member of the education committees at the American Thoracic Society and the Association of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine Program Directors. Her research interests include curriculum development, coaching, leadership, and mentoring. Thank you both for being here with us.
Thanks so much for having us. Super excited to be here.
Same. We're thrilled to be here.
Excellent. Well, I actually, since you're both involved in the Association of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine Program Directors, I remember being at an annual meeting a few years ago and hearing an absolutely hilarious pro-con debate on this very topic between Dr. David Shulman and Dr. Gabe Boslett. So it's obviously a heated topic, if you will. So let's start by discussing why you wanted to research it. What made you ask this question?
Yeah. So as an applicant, I remember feeling very confused about post-interview communications. Should I send thank you notes to everyone, even if they said no correspondences? What did that no correspondences mean? If I received something from a program, like what did that language mean as well? How should I respond, especially if it wasn't my top or my favorite program? If I didn't receive something from a program, what did that mean? There were just so many questions. When Bishak suggested this as a potential study idea and mentioned that there was a similar amount of confusion and variability on the program director side, I was intrigued.
And Dr. John, can you tell us more about the study design?
Yeah. So we wanted to get the perspective of both critical care and pulmonary and critical care applicants and program directors on this topic. We surveyed applicants and program directors immediately following match day for the 2022 NRMP, or National Residency Matching Program, match. We identified applicants by pulling their ERAS email addresses from the author's six institutions, which were intentionally selected for diversity in program size and geography. And program directors were surveyed via the Association of Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine Program Directors, or APCCMPD. While the surveys were not identical, we designed both surveys to ask about the frequency, format, content, goals, and impact of these post-interview communications. Additional questions asked about applicant demographics, and we also included two free text questions about post-interview communication challenges and recommendations.
So, Dr. Charu, there are already guidelines for post-interview communication. What do those say?
That's right. In 2019, the Alliance for Academic Internal Medicine released guidelines that are broad. They cover guidelines for both interview and post-interview communication for graduate medical education recruitment. And these guidelines cover many aspects of recruitment. They recommend adhering to the National Residency Match Program Code of Conduct, which says that program directors should neither require post-interview communication nor should they engage in a misleading way to influence an applicant's rank order list. And in these 2019 guidelines, specifically with regard to post-interview communication, they highlighted a few things. They said programs should, one, state whether they're going to engage in post-interview communication. And here they recommended considering applicant perspectives and reviewing best practices that would eliminate coercion. Two, that they should describe procedures for both program-initiated as well as applicant-initiated post-interview communication. So, for example, would thank you notes be used for ranking decisions, as an example? And then finally, number three, they said, describe what procedures you have for informing top applicants. And here their recommendations were, you really need to define terms that might be open to interpretation. And they specifically called out avoiding phrases like, quote, rank to match, or quote, highly ranked.
So in this study, what did you guys find regarding the use of this post-interview communication? Who was making contact, and what did these contacts or communications consist of?
We learned a lot. We found that about two-thirds of applicants initiated these communications to an average of 4.4 programs, and they did this to convey gratitude, ask additional questions, and let a program know that they would be ranked first or highly. We also learned that about a quarter of applicants' respondents communicated with their top program to convey additional interest, and another 10% reported communicating with additional programs in case they didn't match at their top choice. A third said that they had a mentor or a residency program director contacting programs on their behalf. On the program director side, about half of program directors reported initiating post-interview communications with applicants, and they had similar intentions, with about a quarter expressing gratitude, another quarter offering additional meetings with fellows or faculty, and 20% sharing information on the likelihood of matching at their institution. Communication may have been initiated by the program director or by someone else in the program, such as an APD, a faculty interviewer, division chief, etc. And among those who initiated post-interview communication, 12% only contacted applicants who were ranked to match. Another 12% said they contacted applicants in a likely position to match. And another 12% contacted every applicant.
So how did this communication actually affect things like rank lists for both applicants and the program directors?
Yeah, this was something we were very interested in. Not just is this communication happening, but what's the impact for both applicants and program directors? And when we asked applicants, how helpful was this post-interview communication in creating your final rank order list? They were actually really divided. A quarter said it was really helpful. A quarter said it was not helpful at all. Nearly 30% were completely neutral, and a little over 20% didn't answer this question. So with that one question, we saw that there were clearly mixed opinions. And because some respondents also didn't answer follow-up questions about the impact on rank order list, and specifically whether folks moved up or down on the list, it's really hard to answer this question, but we'll share what we know. We know that we had 184 applicants, which is about half of our respondents, who said, I received program-initiated post-interview communication. And of that group, a quarter changed their rank order list based on the communication that they got. And most of those people ended up moving the program higher up on their rank order list. Then when we looked at the program directors who said, I received applicant-initiated post-interview communication, 17% of them, so again, a small number of a small number who answered this question, said, based on this applicant-initiated communication, I changed my rank order list. And on the program director side, all of them ended up moving applicants up on their rank order list. So I think to summarize, we learned that one, post-interview communication has variable impact on rank list formation on the applicant side. And two, that we likely had too few respondents to draw really firm conclusions on which way people were moving up or down on the rank order list.
So you also performed thematic content analysis of those free text responses. What were some of the themes regarding this communication and its challenges and recommendations?
I found it super interesting that applicants and program directors brought up similar challenges. These included uncertainty about rules and regulations, about how to respond, about interpreting motives from the other party, as well as concerns about misleading language, the time burden in sending and replying to all of these communications, the lack of uniformity, and the sense of peer pressure of are other people doing this? Am I at a disadvantage if I am or I'm not doing this? There were also similar considerations from both groups, sharing post-interview communication policy up front, honesty, greater uniformity, and greater consideration of impact. Free text responses regarding future practices were also split. Some found it helpful, and others thought it should be prohibited.
So, can you please briefly discuss the limitations of this study?
Sure, I can tackle that one. I think our primary limitation was really a low response rate. I think something that's a downside of survey-based research. We had 34% of applicants respond and 32% of program directors. So I think on both sides, about a third from each group responded. And having a lower response rate, this led us to think about whether there might be selection bias. And we went back and looked at our respondents and looked at all of the applicants for that academic year and looked at the electronic residency application service data on gender, race, and ethnicity. And it looked as though the folks who responded to our survey were representative of that cohort. We also considered non-responder bias. We thought about, could someone have received post-interview communication and felt misled? And maybe that would lead them to then not respond to our survey. But given the mixed opinions that we saw in these responses, we think that's probably less likely.
So then, what does this research add to the literature that we did not previously know?
To our knowledge, this is the first study that looked at post-interview communication practices specifically in critical care medicine and pulmonary and critical care medicine fellowship recruitment. Previous literature either focused on practices amongst non-internal medicine specialties or looked across practices across all residency specialties. We also hope to learn more about applicant and program director motives for participating in these communications. Our results reinforce the mixed perspectives regarding post-interview communications amongst both applicants and program directors. Additionally, they suggest that while these communications don't impact final rank order lists for most applicants and programs, a small minority of applicants and program directors reported altering their rank order list based on communications from the other party.
So then, what do you guys see as next important steps for like this research?
Greater transparency regarding rules and expectations, having a conversation about greater uniformity across programs, organizations such as APCCMPD or AAIM could encourage best practices or more deliberate fellowship recruitment specific recommendations for these post-interview communications with this, or certainly within critical care medicine and pulmonary and critical care medicine recruitment.
So, what if would be your final kind of takeaway point? If you could give our listeners one closing thought on what you've learned from this research, this project, the guidelines, what do you want them to take away from this discussion?
Yeah, this study doesn't give a perfect one-size-fits-all answer on how to best approach post-interview communications, but it does reveal that there's a lot of variability and confusion about how to engage. Fellowship recruitment is an exciting and stressful time for both parties. We should find a way to mitigate any unnecessary burdens.
And Dr. Turi?
Yeah, I completely agree. A really big theme that stood out for me was that theme of uncertainty. And hearing from both applicants and program directors, they're just not sure what they should be doing in regards to post-interview communication. And I also agree that I'm not sure we know based on our study what the right approach is, but there are clearly aspects of post-interview communication that are stressful for applicants and program directors alike. And this just seems like an opportunity for our national organizations to provide more clarity.
Well, I think this is just a really important topic that really affects the applicants that we have coming into our field. And we want to make sure that when we're first interacting with them, that we're doing it in a professional way. So figuring out how to do this, if we should be doing it, and what effect it has, I think is a really important next step. So I appreciate you guys tackling this. So a big thank you to both Drs. John and Dr. Chiru for a fascinating discussion. And a big thank you, of course, to our CHEST community for joining us. I'm Gretchen Winter, and this is a CHEST podcast. Until next time.